Accession number 12385, rule 18.
Rule 18. Yes, the pain was still intense, but I presume they'd given me painkillers or something at that time. And when the doctor came around visiting, that he said, "Boy, you had a very, very close shave that time." I said, "What, in the arm?" And I said, "I'm not talking about the arm." He said, "It's the amount of liquor that you'd imbibed and we had to pump out of you." He said, so it appeared that...
saying about all the booze.
Yes. According to Leo, when I met him next, he said that I'd had over 1.5 bottles of this fiery cognac, and he'd had little less than half of it, and half a bottle, and there was just a minute amount to take back to the rest of the company. But anyway, they kept me, they put a sort of yes, what they did, they then shipped me out to the hospital, first of all in Murcia in the south of Spain, and then to Benicassin, where they gave me an anesthetic and stretched my fingers out because they were contracting the first three fingers of my right hand, although the thumb and the forefinger seemed to be okay. And they stretched that out, and they made a metal brace which they fitted to the thing. And and then I moved there to Benicassim. I think this was roughly about just before Christmas. This would have been in November, I think. Yes, this was quite a bit before Christmas, in November. And then in December, they I left Benicassin, and the pain had gone from my hand. So I took off the plaster that was housing this metal contraption that they put on my hand there, and rejoined the company at the front. By this time, they were they had moved in reserve, but behind near Teruel. This was bitterly cold. I would say about 20 degrees below zero. It was one of the coldest, if not the coldest, winter they'd ever had in Spain. And also, you were in the mountains several thousand feet high. So Teruel was a city that the Republic was very anxious to gain control of, because they... it controlled all the communications for that area. And so for some while, I think the Christmas of 1937 was just before or just after was spent outside Teruel. And I think, talking about Christmases in Spain, the previous Christmas, it just as well to go back and say just a few words on how I spent Christmas in the Basque Country in 1936. For some unknown reason, we'd been shifted by truck and train to some part of Spain. I don't know, but it was way up in the mountains in Spain. I think we were supposed to be guarding some reservoir or something. But to this day, I never did discover actually where we were at that time. All I know is that on the day before Christmas Eve, we detrained from the trucks and then marched about 20 kilometers, and then we were just left on a bare hillside that was completely rocky, that there was no chance of digging any sort of cover or anything. There was just the rock was showing through above ground. There was not more than a few inches of earth covering the thing. There were a few scrub bushes and so on there, but we were camped on the hillside. Our machine gun company were put out there, and this was on the sloping of this hill, and when daylight, it was almost a full moon. It was brilliantly, almost like daylight at night. I remember this very vividly, especially with the white stone reflecting the light of the moon. Everything was shining and so on, and very, very, very cold. And then this mountain sloped down to some sort of river we could see in the distance about 5 kilometers away before it began to rise on the opposite side. There we saw that long line of fires and so on that the fascists had built. We started to scour around, getting what scrub we could. And I've got a feeling they did dump some timber and so on from the trucks. And I think that was brought up by some of the people who make trenches and so on. We chopped those up to make fires, campfires. And I remember Christmas Eve very, very vividly, because it was just a complete, there was no snow, but it was completely covered in frost, and with the white stone and all of this frost, it reminded me very much of the songs I could remember from childhood, while shepherds watched their flocks by night, all seated on the ground. And there we were, seated on the ground, because we couldn't get into the ground. And and freezing cold, we snuggled up in our ponchos and got as close to the campfires as possible and kept replenishing them. But I do remember that looking down on the other side to the enemy lines, and they must have been experiencing exactly the same conditions. And they'd got I think, 3 or 4 88-millimeter guns. Every now and again, they would fire at us, and you'd hear the whistling of the shells. But there was nothing we could do about it. We couldn't dig any trenches or even a foxhole or anything there. But what they were doing were trying to sort out our 75-millimeter guns up on the crest of the hill there. And every so often, again, our guns would reply to the other ones. It looked as though it was just a sort of tit-for-tat banging away at each other. I think just a pure sort of symbolic gesture at the same. I don't know whether it was done to give the troops any respite or anything, but That comes vividly to mind, and I thought I'd mention that. This was in the Christmas of 36. And then to jump forward...
What happened on Christmas Day?
On Christmas Day, I think we got probably... I've got a vague feeling we got a hot meal in the middle of the day. It was brought up. I don't know quite how they brought it up. They'd fixed up probably a field kitchen somewhere in the rear, and they'd brought the food up by meal. But we had a sort of stew of could be anything, beef stew or horse stew or mule stew or something like that. So that, apart from that, there was nothing special there. But at least we got a hot meal, I remember, on the Christmas Day following. Then for some reason, after leaving us there for 2 or 3 days, they shipped us back to where we'd come from. So that you don't know when you're in the army, you don't know what's happening. You just, you're shifted here and you're shifted there. And then to come back to Teruel, that again, I'm a bit uncertain about the dates, but it was freezing cold there. Infinitely colder than the previous Christmas, but we were able to, we were in trenches just outside Teruel there, by this time I'd had my I was still getting twinges of pain from time to time with my arm, but I concealed that as well as I could do so. And when Leo asked me how my arm was, I said it was just fine and so on. Otherwise, he would have had me hauled back again to hospital. Then I remember that the story going round the ranks there, that Paul Robeson's come up to sing to us. And on this... a beautiful, everything was, there was about 2 foot depth of snow, hard packed snow, and Paul Robeson came out and sang to us in his deep voice. I can't remember that, I remember he sang Old Man River and one of the other, and probably the International and one or two other songs. Then it was just a question of going back and trying to keep warm by any means within your power. That then I think maybe it was this was. Perhaps 2 weeks later, we moved into the front lines in Teruel. When we moved up there in the trenches there, that we were ready for the attack. And I think it took place on the 17th of January. I got mixed up there, that by this time... We had captured Teruel. Do you want to go back?
Yeah, I'd like to go back and you tell me about capturing Teruel, if you
yes,
would.
Yes, oh yeah. Yes. That if you're going back.
How did you capture Teruel?
Fighting for Teruel again was very, very bitter, terribly cold, and fighting from house to house, hand grenades, setting up your machine guns and enfilating with machine gun fire and sort of things, and bringing up the 75 millimeter guns and hammering away. And Teruel was built as a fortress, I think, in Napoleonic times, and it was terribly hard to secure. But
how long did it take?
This we were when we got to Teruel, the international brigades, I think, didn't actually take part in the storming of Teruel, but we did. Just took part in the mopping up of the operations, because I think they wanted it to be an all-Spanish affair, that the taking of Teruel was not by the international brigades, but by Republican Spaniards. But there was still much bloody fighting with... and then we were in the some of the houses in Teruel there that we got some shelter from the cold, the freezing cold all the time, and that yes, I think was on January the 15th we moved actually into the line, actually in Teruel itself. Because although it was three-quarters surrounded by the fascists still, we gained control of it. And then on the 17th, the fascists made their initial attack. And it was such a important strategic center that they threw everything they had into the fighting. The whole of the daylight hours were taken up with the planes in the sky and their dive bombers coming down, dive bombing you and machine gunning you and so on there. And I think that this was about the middle of January, and for 2 weeks then, we were continuously fighting to hold at Teruel. And I remember we were stationed in a factory, Leo Gordon, or Leo Mendelowitz, but I discovered later his real name was Leo Gordon. He had us... protecting the left flank of the 15th International Brigade, that is the Americans and the British and the MacPaps. And I think they said at that time there was a famous Moroccan cavalry charge at that time at Teruel, which almost captured the general headquarters of the MacPat battalion, and only by arming all the cooks and the battalion commander, I've forgotten his name too, at that time, that they were able. I think they were in a tunnel under a railroad track in Teruel itself. But somehow we missed this attack, because they swept by, and I think we were on the left flank and didn't see them. I remember Bill Alexander mentioning that. Do you remember the attack by the by the Moorish cavalry? And I said I couldn't remember that. It may be... I remembered it at the time, but it didn't impress itself on my mind at any length. But anyway, the cold was bitter. The people were losing limbs through frostbite, and we were clothed rather like in anything we could grab hold of, rather like Hitler's woebegone troops at Stalingrad later on. That I mean, we didn't loot people's houses, but were there houses that were empty and there were shawls or anything like that, blankets, we'd cover ourselves up. And then I think they began in the middle of January, the fascists began their attack, and then on February, at the beginning of February, our battalion had the order to start to retreat from Teruel, and we were harassed all the time by the fascists, and I just can't recall how it was that I was on one machine gun, I think with one of the Finns or so on, and Leo Mendelowitz was, he was the machine gun company commander, and he was on another machine gun, but we got separated somehow there, that, and although in the fury of the fighting you could never check up where anyone was, and you were gradually being driven back, and the thing was to try and keep your guns at any cost, so that this is what we did to a great extent. The retreat started in a fairly orderly fashion, but then it dissolved into a mad rush to get back to the sea before the fascists could cut us off. And the rest of the time is very, very hectic for the... I think we were taken out of the line for a while at that time, but that then came back, and I think it was at a place called Siguero, S-E-G-U-R-O, to meet the new fascist offensive. And by this time we'd lost a terrific amount of troops, as had the British and the...
Is this at the stage you'd been to Madrid and...
Pardon?
Had you been to Madrid and all that?
Let's see, that...
I don't want to go ahead of you, but...
No. I should have mentioned here, when I left hospital and in November, when I left Benicassin, I went to Madrid, and that must have been when I met Hemingway.
Could you tell me about that story? Could you tell me that story again, please?
Yes, Hemingway was quite a character. He was larger than life, but... He was full of bonhomie and sort of thing. And the chief reason why some of the Americans who'd known him back home and also some who didn't, but they all knew... wherever Hemingway was, there would be liquor, so that we made our way to, when we were on leave. I think we had about a week's leave in Madrid, but perhaps 2 weeks leave. I'm not quite certain of that. And then when we got to... Madrid, some of the people, I think it was in the Hotel Florida that Hemingway was lined up, and they all said that wherever Hemingway is, there'd be plenty of liquor. I wasn't a great drinking guy, but I'd go along with any of the others if they wanted to find some drinks there, and we went along, and we were always made welcome. I can't remember any other than American or Canadians in this group, about half a dozen maybe sitting around in this. And I remember Hemingway saying, well, I think, boys, it'd be better. I think we're sitting on the floor. I'm not certain. I think it's better if you sit against this wall. It's less likely to be blasted by the fascists. And every now and again, there would be the boom of the of the fascist cannon opening up, and a blast would shake the whole building. But I think all his windows were taped up. I don't think they. I can't remember any broken windows or anything there that. And he was always liberal, dashing whenever one had any an empty glass. He would say, "Well, just fill it up, boys." And what a choice of liquor: rum, brandy, all sorts of stuff there, whiskey, and. I found him very entertaining. He'd talk on any subject, on just talk, and made it very, very engrossing, and so on. One fellow, I'm not certain, that I've got a feeling that it was Alva Bessie who wrote several books on Spain, called Men in Battle, amongst others. But I may be wrong in that. Once said to Ernest Hemingway, why don't you join us in the fight in the trenches? Because he was always in the front line, Hemingway, getting views of the soldiers that... he was in University City. I don't mean permanently, but he'd be like visits from war correspondents later on. And Hemingway replied, "Are you crazy? You think I should get my head blown off? And what good would that do it? I'm way more useful to the Republic alive with my pen than I could be a dead hero," or words to that effect. And I had a feeling that Alva Bessie wasn't convinced. I think Bessie was in the Lincolns at this time, that and then it came back. I forgot to mention that when I was separated from... I have mentioned that.
What was that? So you're just saying, what happened on the retreat from Teruel?
Pardon?
On the retreat from Teruel, yeah.
Yes. Oh, yes. Then switching back to... all February 1938... 1937, we were retreating there, and somehow, I don't know how it was, that after the in the mix-up and the headlong rush for the sea there, that Leo Mendelawitz and I got separated, which was for the first time since we'd been in the MacPeps, but... And some people, some of the people in our section of the machine gun company said that that was Leo Mendelowitz's machine gun that was firing on a hillside in the distance, that apparently he was cut off and he was he resisted to the last, and I don't recollect whether the firing just stopped or whether we just retreated further and we couldn't hear it anymore, but I never did discover exactly what happened, except that he and his section were cut off, and